Will you join me in the party pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the party of the United Party of Parties, and to the party for which it stands, one party, under party, party, with party and party for all.
Richard, what's up?
Hey, Zach. Another week.
Another week. This is episode 4 now of the Party, Party, Party podcast.
Yep.
How have things been going?
Good, good. We had a little bit of a couple week hiatus.
That's right.
And we actually went on a little trip together, didn't we?
We sure did.
Yeah, we went to Yosemite National Park and did like a little camping, hiking trip.
Yep. We stopped in San Francisco and ate some sushi.
Yep. We don't live near each other, so we both flew up there, and I guess you flew down, and we met up, and that was a good time.
Yeah. So that kind of, you know, this is our fourth episode, and you're bringing up, you know, where we're from and stuff. That might be one thing that people may or may not be interested in, but we can touch it on it briefly. Like, who are we? What is this podcast that we're doing, and like, why are we doing it? Or you know, so you know, who for anyone who might care, briefly, Richard, who are you?
You know, I'm just a fan of Andrew WK, and I think you called me up and said, hey, you wanted to start this podcast, and I was like, sure, I'm into that kind of thing, so. That's why it was my motive, is you inviting me. And so I was like, let's do it. But I've been following NRWK for a long time, and I'm a big fan of his. And so I feel like I have good insights. You know, I've thought about some things and followed his career. So here I am.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we shouldn't neglect to mention how you are the operator of the AndrewWKMusic.com Andrew WK fan website.
Yep. That's also true. I've been doing that since 2000, and I think it was 2009 is when I started that. So
that's been a pretty good run, that website.
Yeah,
it's had some ups and downs, but yeah.
Absolutely, it's definitely, there's times when life has a funny way of, you know, taking you down paths you weren't expecting. And there's been times when I've had to not abandon things completely, but I had to change my focus, you know, like focus on things different. And so I couldn't spend as much time doing that as I would like to have. And there's been other times where it's like I'm in the thick of it posting stuff all the time. So it's definitely had ups and downs.
Cool. Yeah. And so I'm your friend, and we've known each other since about fifth grade, I think.
That sounds right.
And also a very big fan of Andrew WK, and a very big fan of the ideas that surround Andrew WK in terms of what a party is and what his music means. And just the thing that I love about Andrew WK's music is that it's got layers. And it's for everybody, and it's very inclusive, and it's very fun. And there isn't a lot of other music that I think can encompass as much of a diversity of people, and can have a message that's unique to everybody, depending on what they want it to be. And so that's what I'm excited about with this podcast, is not just talking about Andrew WK and what he's doing recently, and what the news is, and what the latest stuff about Andrew WK is, which I'm very interested in talking about, but also just talking about, like, what does Andrew WK mean, and what's the songs about, and how can we, you know, have more fun?
It's kind of like we're talking about life, but we're using Andrew WK as a vehicle.
Yes, I like that. Yes.
So what did you, what was your motive behind, because you reached out to me, Zach, what was like your, and I honestly, I do not know, what was your motive?
So,
let me guess. I assume, I mean, he came to port. He came up there, right? Didn't he? No.
On tour?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I was spacing. I was thinking of someone else. So he came up, and I'm guessing that's at least maybe part of the catalyst of this.
Yeah. Well, I really like podcasts. I listen to a few different podcasts a week, probably. I think the medium is fantastic, and I've always wanted to have a podcast, but it's always been hard to try and figure out something that would be fun to talk about. But here's the thing with any kind of hobby or initiative one might do, especially when it comes into the arena of, ooh, I'm going to start up like a side hustle or some side business or like an Etsy shop or resell things on Amazon or whatever that is, or create a website that I could drive lots of traffic to or start a blog. These right. things have a high probability of fizzing out, because once you start to do it, you kind of get bored. At least that's been my experience. But the thing that excited me about an Andy WK podcast was, I don't know if I'll ever get bored of this.
I haven't.
Because I like talking to you, and I like talking about Andy WK, and I think the whole premise is a lot of fun. And so that was my motivation, was to, I thought it would be fun to have a podcast with you, because podcasts are fun. And I also think it would be fun to talk about Andrew WK with you and have fun doing it.
Wow. Well, those are very pure motives, and I approve. Almost like an altruistic.
Yeah.
Mission.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, you know, with anybody who's tried to start their own anything, you have to be careful about what you select as your incentive or your motivator to do it. Because if it's strictly financial, not to say that this has any kind of real possibility for financial gain, which it has a very slim chance of, but money can be a very good motivator, but when it comes to things you do on your own time, money probably is the worst motivator in my experience. You've got to really enjoy it, because anything that's going to ever really take off or become any kind of popular or give you any kind of other satisfaction besides just its intrinsic satisfaction, it's going to take a long time. And to get you there, you've got to enjoy it.
Right. Yeah. I was just actually thinking about this a couple weeks ago with like companies that go public.
Yeah.
You know, and how... it's good because they raise capital and then they can expand and do other things. But a lot of times, sometimes I see the companies and the product gets worse for the consumer. You know, yes, they're making more sales, but they push it so far where it becomes like not a good user experience for the product or service, because they're trying to push that envelope so far. It's just like the product becomes annoying. You know, it's like, okay, I get you want my money, but like, come on, it's just not worth it anymore. And so I've noticed that when companies go public, there's a higher tendency to do that, because they're accountable to the shareholders or whatever. And whereas a private company, you know, I don't know if I would. I really like the idea of private companies and just like maintaining the status quo. You know, why, if you have something good, why push it to the extreme, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know what I think is the reason a lot of times for that problem is that it's the focus on short-term profits as opposed to long-term success. And so when a publicly traded company, they're really highly incentivized to do...
Quarterly, right?
Quarterly, to make a bunch of money right now. And they do that more often than not at the expense of the future. And so that means cutting corners or, you know, cutting quality or making customer service worse, all in the name of profits in the next 3 months. And so that's kind of, I guess that kind of works with your own personal life too. Like if you're truly, you know, looking to maximize long-term value, you can really ruin it if you try and just think about like, what am I going to get out of this right now? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So last time we talked, you kind of left us on a cliffhanger with this this so-called Andy WK conspiracy theories. Do you have anything else you'd like to talk about that?
Yeah, so I know people are just like biting at my heels to, you know, get this cliffhanger solved. And so what I've done is I've decided to actually prolong that process of the anxiety of not knowing. So actually, okay, so here's what happened. I wanted to talk about the conspiracy theory stuff, but then as I was kind of like, you know, what am I actually going to talk about when I was thinking about stuff, I realized it couldn't really all be contained in, you know, a 5 or 10 minute segment of this podcast, and I needed to blow it out into maybe like a half hour, maybe even an hour long thing. And so I've videoed most of it, and what I'm going to do, and I'll provide it in link of the SoundCloud link of this podcast, or whatever link, wherever your platform you're hearing this on, and I'll post this link to the actual YouTube video where I'm going to dive a little bit deeper. It's also going to be, it's a better format because there's like some visual things I think are important to see. And I'm going to blow it out to a lot more in depth because I don't think I could validate or what I was saying in like a 10 minute clip segment thingy. So people are going to have to wait until I post that video.
So the cliffhanger continues. We still just have to hold on onto this cliff until we get the, okay. Sounds good to
but
me.
I do.
Cause you just I, want, I you want to do the topic justice.
Yes. Thank you. That's a good way to put it. And I feel like there would be too many holes in what I was saying, you know, that type of thing. If I did it like that. So,
right,
but I do have something else though.
Oh yes. Let's hear it.
That is sort of related. It's a little bit more heavy. You know, we like to keep it lighthearted here, but this is sort of a little bit of a heavy topic. And it's related to Andrew WK. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So, we grew up liking punk rock music, right?
Right.
I don't know. When do you think we got in that? Like middle school?
You know what? I have a very embarrassing thing about, like, I don't know if you've ever had this conversation with someone about, like, what was the first CD you ever bought?
Mm-hmm.
But I remember ska was really cool, and so I bought a Squirrel Nut Zippers CD thinking it was ska.
Zach, don't be embarrassed of that.
And I was like, man, I love ska, listening to the Squirrel Nut Zippers. Which is, for those who don't know, Squirrel Nut Zippers is like some kind of a, it's like a jazzy kind of like, what's the word? Ragtime kind of band.
Well, you were 10.
Yeah. Okay, but you know, go on. Yes.
You've got good punk rock street cred.
Oh,
in
good.
My eyes.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know, I feel like you have good taste in music.
Yeah, I still listen to a lot of punk music. I have not grown out of it, and I don't think I ever will. I think it's just something that I, no matter how long I listen to it, I still enjoy the simplicity of three chords and just the creativity that's in just that really small, narrow genre.
Right? Isn't that great? I love it. It's like drums, guitar, you know, distorted guitar, bass.
Yep.
It's all you need.
Yep. There's no extra anything you need. It's just who can do those, you know, bass, guitar, and drums played fast. You don't need anything else, and who can do it the most interesting, you know? And that's just like what's so great about it,
right? Like you have these progressive rock bands where they just are shredding on the guitar, and it's like, well, that's cool and that's awesome you have that talent, but does it sound good? You know, I don't know. I think I'd rather be listening to like this really cool punk rock song.
Yeah, it's just how accessible it is, which makes it so cool. Anybody can do it, and that's what makes it so great.
Right. Okay, so, right, middle school-ish, whatever. Anyway, so we grew up liking punk rock, but there's an interesting dynamic in punk rock that's going to contrast another point of view that I have, which is authenticity. So I wanted to ask you, Zach, is it important to you if a band or maybe it's an entire music genre. But okay, so we both like Rancid, right?
Uh-huh.
That's like one of our favorite bands. We both are in agreement on that, I think. Maybe not your favorite band, but it is definitely one of mine. I, last time I checked, it was one of yours too, right?
Yeah, yeah, I love Rancid.
So is it important to you for Rancid to be authentic?
That's a good question. And so when you say authentic, do you mean like if I were to listen to the lyrics?
Kind of like a trick. I'm like setting you up, right?
So if I were listening to like a Rancid, like let's say their latest Rancid song, and Tim Armstrong starts singing about, here's something. I don't know. I'm trying to think about, I don't think Rancid is the best example. Recently, I don't know. I think I somehow was listening to an interview, I think, of Rivers Cuomo, the lead singer of Weezer.
Okay.
And they have another CD coming out. They just come out with CDs like every other year. Anyways, mm-hmm. I think this was like for their last album. And I like Weezer okay. And I always listen to every new album that come out, but I never like love them as much. I was really into Weezer, I think, when I was around freshman in high school. I like really loved Pinkerton and the Blue Album and some of the other things. And anyways, and he's like, that guy, I don't know how old he is. Rivers is probably in his early 40s, gotta be, mm-hmm. late, mid 40s. Anyways, and his song, he writes songs about hanging out in high school and trying to pick up chicks.
He does that now? He's doing that now in songs?
Yeah, like his songs, like the latest Weezer album, there's songs about like being nervous to ask a girl out on a date.
Okay, dude, that's really weird because that was going to be like one of the examples I was going to kind of use.
Yeah.
With Blink-182. One time, I think it was in high school or maybe it was, as in college, I don't remember, but one time I was listening to one of Blink-182's like newer, you know, not like, this was like before they even had that gap where they weren't doing anything. Maybe even Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, I don't remember. But there was a song, and at the same time I was listening to the song, I kind of figured out the math in my head and realized that this song is about like going on a date with a girl. Picked her up on my very first date,
yeah.
You know, type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did the math, and I was like thinking, "Holy cow, this guy's like 32 years old."
Right.
I'm like, what? This makes no sense, you know?
Yeah, and so that's a good question. So it's kind of like, in a way, like, it might bother you that he's not being authentic, but maybe it's like he's being authentic to what Blink-182 is. Or Rivers is like being authentic to what Weezer is. Like Weezer is a thing that he performs for, not who he is.
Right.
And so he's like, no, this is a Weezer song. When you listen to Weezer, you're listening to things about, you know, being shy or apprehensive about, you know, or just like, I don't know, all of kinds of like high schoolish, immature kind of topics. You don't mm-hmm. listen to Weezer for other things. So, so it's kind of like, what is that? When I listen to songs by, like if I were to hear a new Blink-182 song now and it's talking about going on dates or something, that would, to answer your question, that would rub me a little bit wrong. I would be kind of like, why are these guys still singing about this? And it's probably because I've grown up too. And mm-hmm. I bet you there's teenagers who are getting the latest Blink-182 album, the latest Weezer album, and they're totally in it. And they don't really think twice because they're like, no, this is a Weezer song. They're able to disconnect the person from the music. Whereas me, I'm like, I listened to Weezer for over a decade now, and he's still singing the same things.
Zach, you're a really smart guy. I asked you off the cuff, and you came up with this. The same conclusion that it's taken me like 10 years to figure out. No, I salute you.
So what's the conclusion then?
So to bring it back to NRWK, like and also punk rock music, I would argue that in the punk rock world, like maybe there are other genres where it's more important, but authenticity is like huge in the punk rock genre, right?
Like it is. Yeah.
You got to be like shooting up heroin and like putting your hair in mohawks every day and, just like being a hooligan running around on the street with like a baseball bat and like spikes sticking out of it and like getting into fights. I don't know whatever punk rock guys are supposed to do, whatever that means.
Right.
Like, if you're going to play in a band, you better be living that life.
Right. Yeah. There's probably, I don't know of another genre that has as much, I don't know what it is, anger about sellouts than punk music.
Right. Like, you're on an independent label. Oh yeah. And you're going to sign to this big, one of the three big major labels, Sony, Universal, and whatever the other one is.
Yeah. So it's really important to certain people that the band be poor.
Right.
That,
right.
That has an effect. And I acknowledge that sounds silly to me. Like the music is what it is. Who cares how much money the band makes? If they want to make a living out of it and the music sounds good to me, then I should enjoy it. Wow. You know, if Weezer comes out with a song that's still about high school and I don't enjoy it, well, then I'll just stop listening. But I'm not going to accuse them of selling out and be mad. I'm just going to listen to the music for the music's sake. And if I like it or I don't like it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that's my views on it as well, because it's music. It's kind of weird how these genres are like defined by things like this. And I'm sure there's like other genres that have other weird quirks, but it's just why not just enjoy it for what it is in a way, you know, like why even, I guess, I mean, I'm not totally against, like, opposed to defining things, like, you know, that fits into this box, but sometimes the rules are arbitrary and silly to me. But anyway, so, like, with punk rock music, you know, authenticity is super important. But then look at that with, like, with pop music, right? So
right.
Britney Spears or NSYNC or, I don't know, who... Katy Perry.
The pop music of 10 years ago? Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. That's all I got, man. I don't keep up. I should.
Taylor Swift, so, dude. Taylor Swift, right. Now. Yeah.
Yeah, she made that whole transformation. And, like, I think people know. Actually, yeah, I wanted to give a couple examples. People know, right? They know that, well, maybe they don't. Maybe they think that these people don't have like a giant machine behind them, right? Like a team that is coordinating and managing their social media accounts and helping them develop their messaging and aesthetics and helping them write songs and they have to know that, right? People have to know that. These
yeah, they do, but I think that there's a perception that the artist still has like some kind of veto or final say, and that like all of the songs come with the artist's stamp of approval. It's almost as if maybe the perception is that there's like a whole bunch of people writing songs, like there's a track list of 50 things, but the artist comes in and says, oh, I'm going to tweak these a little bit and I'll turn them into mine. And these ones that aren't me, I'll leave on the table. And all the ones that end up on the album are the ones that I do give my approval for, which I guess is kind of how people take that in.
You're saying that's how they reconcile it and feel like it's okay.
Totally. And I don't know. I doubt that's true. I think that they probably have less say than we think they do.
Right. I think maybe it changes case to case, like how much leverage an artist had, like Taylor Swift. I bet she has a whole lot of leverage over that. Whoever she's working with, right? Like, I think it probably, but I think there's probably other like lesser known bands where, it's totally like that, where they've done a lot of market research and the record label knows better than the artist what's going to sell. And so they say, hey, listen up, we got this song for you. You're going to perform it and you're going to make it your own, but it's going to sell a lot of money because your other song that you wrote sucks.
Right.
Okay. So Maybe people who do listen to that the pop music genre, they do know it's kind of a gimmick, and or maybe they just like it's kind of like a they turn the blind eye to it. And you know what? I'm all for it. Like I'm 100% on board with that. Actually, like I have no problem with that. If you make a song that sounds good and great.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, what we're seeing over how people reconcile it, I don't think people even do any kind of like conscious analysis. The song comes on and they like it or they don't like it. They don't really care who made it, or they care that it came from the musician that they like. But as to how it was made, I bet people just like don't even think twice. They're like, who cares? This makes me feel good. That's the only criteria by which I'm judging.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting concept. And, okay, I'm going to speed up a little bit because I know we can't just talk about this the whole time, but, so let's talk. Okay. So what about, we know that that's how people are in the pop, genre, but that's not the same type of behavior if that was the same story with punk music, it'd be different, right?
Right.
So what about like, let's talk about, Marilyn Manson, right? So he's kind of one of the more better examples I can think of where he, his whole messaging and image is like super extreme. And once you see him on like a talk show or an interview, he's like this really well poised, and well-spoken person. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but like he's intelligent. He's not like his performance, right? He's a person. Right. And yeah, like if you see these interviews, he's like a well-spoken, articulate guy who is not like super in your face and extreme. And I'm gonna like kill every baby, you know,
right.
And your firstborn child and like eat their heart, you know, that kind of thing. He's an intelligent guy. And so you can kind of get the sense that, oh, he's doing this for shock value, right? Like he doesn't wake up in a dungeon.
Right.
And he eats bats for breakfast kind of thing.
Well, it's almost like an artist, whether if you're a painter or, you know, or a sculptor, it's like you're choosing the medium by which to express yourself. And so like someone can choose watercolor, they could choose clay, they could choose paint, and Marilyn Manson chose like this kind of industrial heavy death metal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So he's just a really good example that I've thought of that has that separate person who he is and then the entertainment version of himself. And I mean, the list goes on. You could do it with Cher. You could do it with Lady Gaga. You know, does Lady Gaga really go to bed at night with like those huge headpieces on, those headsets? You know,
right,
like that's
right.
Not who she is. It's entertainment.
Right.
So let's bring it back full circle. Let's talk about Andrew WK for a second.
Yes. Yes.
Like who is Andrew WK? I can't say that I know who Andrew Wilkes Creer is, but I can say I know about the career of Andrew WK, the performer.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting about Andrew WK is he rides that line of like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Is he authentic? Or is this am I watching entertainment? And what I mean by that is like, he wears a white shirt and white pants at, you know, every concert, photo shoot, whatever. Radio show or talk show that he's on. But like, do people really think that he, like, if he's going to out to eat with his wife or go to Thanksgiving with his family or even shopping at the grocery store, like, is he that guy? Is that what he's wearing? Is he like on at 110% all day long and like this, I'm a party guy, this is crazy? Or let's take a step back, or is this entertainment that we're watching?
It's a good question. You're right that he does. He definitely portrays the idea that he is his persona. Like, it's not a persona. It's like, that's his life. Uh-huh. In all his interviews, you know, he's always dressed the same way. I don't know. I wonder, like, you know, in those kind of in his speaking gigs or his Dear Andrew WK kind of advice columns, you kind of get a sense that he's like, he's being very articulate in those things a lot of the time, but he still has this very party and, like, I don't know, kind of like deepness to it that he's trying to portray. I kind of feel like he's authentic more than not. What do you think?
So I think it depends on the context of, like, which aspect of entertainment or presentation of Andrew WK you're talking about. So yeah, I agree. In his advice columns, like, I mean, if that's an act, like, I don't know, that's really like, I don't know how you do that. You know, some of the advice that he gives out and the thought process behind it, like, and the speaking tour is a good example. Like, a lot of times people, will say, you're so positive, you know, like, you're such a positive guy. Thank you. You've helped my life. Uh-huh. And he'll be like, no, I'm not really, like, he'll be like real with them and say, hey, I'm not that guy. You know, in fact, I have a lot of demons and I struggle with stuff and I put out that positivity because, like, that's who I'm trying to be, kind of thing.
Right.
And so I feel like in those scenarios, yeah, he's very, like, authentic, because I feel like human beings are pretty well at reading things. Like, I read like this thing once that kids know when an adult is, like, really laughing versus fake laughing.
Uh-huh.
And kids, even at a young age, can pick up on that, those kind of, like, subtleties. And so I think humans can also do a pretty good job at that. I mean, adult humans can do a good job at that. And in those instances, the way I read it is that he is authentic, but there's other times where, like, I wonder if the idea behind it, like, oh, I'm going to be like this buddy, like, hey, I'm going to be your friend. He had that whole TV show on Your Friend, Andrew WK. And I'm like, I don't know. I think there are other examples of where it's like, okay, this is like kind of an act, you know, you're all hyped up on this radio show because you're entertaining people. Like, it's good that you're hyped up, because it would be boring if you weren't. And, I think there are aspects, I guess what I'm saying is, I think there's both. There's aspects of putting on a show and entertainment. And then there's, like, those more candid moments as well.
And I think it's really hard to peel away anybody in trying to figure out when are they being authentic versus when are they portraying a different version of themselves. Because I think it's not hard to argue that we are, all of us, multiple kinds of people. You know, like, mm-hmm. I could go out to dinner with another couple with my wife, and mm-hmm. I'll be a different person with this person I don't know as well, and we're being polite and chit-chatty, than I would be hanging out with you and we're, like, doing something. You know what I mean? Like, my sense of humor would be different. The things I would consider saying would be different.
Sure.
Or, like, Absolutely. The kind of person I am at work. And if you or anyone else who's listening is familiar with white-collar work in general or working for companies, like, there's this weird game where you have to pretend loyalty and pretend about caring.
Mm-hmm.
You do care about your job to a certain degree, but there's another degree where it's really just for show. And mm-hmm. so, like, when I think about Andy WK, it's like, it doesn't bother me to think that he could be portraying a version that isn't really him. It is mm-hmm. him. It's just different versions of him, just like we all have different versions of ourselves.
Right.
I mean, he's working hard to portray a certain kind of thing or a certain kind of person or a certain kind of attitude and vibe and persona that is the one we all want him to be and enjoy. And so there's, like, a performance there. But at the same time, I think he likes that person too. And he wants to be, it's kind of like his best self, or it's not like, Like, I think about musicians who...
It's not like it's completely unnatural.
Right. It's not completely unnatural. Because I could think of people, like maybe Rivers Cuomo is sick to death of singing the same songs on tour night after night about, you know, not being it, like, you know, feeling depressed about getting turned down by a girl or something.
Right.
And he has to go act out this thing, and he goes out to the audience, and there are a bunch of teenagers who are listening. It's like, am I just a clown? Am I just like this trained monkey who's performing for these people, and I have nothing. This isn't me at all. And I don't think Andrew is that, right? Like, he definitely is closer to his persona and more authentic than I think a lot of other people who are kind of like portraying this thing that isn't really them.
Yeah. I think, again, it goes back to the context of which, what, when you're talking. So, like, I don't think it's too far-fetched either, though, because when, like, when he first got signed to Island Def Jam Records, I mean, he was already kind of doing the Andrew WK thing, right? He was on the independent label. It was called Bulb Records, and he was doing Andrew WK. He had around, like, 40 tracks or so. And yeah, there was already like these demo versions of It's Time to Party and Party Hard and We Want Fun and those kinds of things. But there's a whole lot of other tracks that weren't like that. He has a song called Kill Yourself, or and it's very like not part, like, wait, what is it called?
Not Positive.
Yeah, it's Not Positive. I can't believe I can't remember the name of this song right now.
No, I think you're onto something, though, because I think, like we've kind of discussed before.
Oh, yeah. It's called Literally Kill Yourself.
Right. And, you know, and like we've discussed before, I feel like that original Andrew WK from the I Get Wet album, when he first came out and had that first music video of Party Hard, that has a taste of manufactured, or there were suits in the background who were signing the dotted lines with Andrew, and be like, we are creating a persona that is this party guy that we think could really reach the 18 to 30 demographic that, according to our data, could really be profitable right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that Andrew has morphed that a little bit over time. He's definitely like taken that persona that was crafted, that he had, like you said, he had a part to play with it, but was fully realized with like some kind of other people.
Right. It was kind of like, oh, you have all these tracks. Okay, let's pick this one. And oh, that party thing that you do, like, let's amp that up a bunch of notches. And oh, you're doing this other, no, let's play that down. And
right.
Oh, like, this is a cool look kind of thing. And so he did this thing where he wore, like sports clothes, like these like faded, like team, like there were t-shirts, like, he wore like sports, team clothing, not like jerseys and stuff, but, and it was like, as soon as he, jumped over to Island, that like that all went away, and he wore like white clothes from then on. So like, maybe they, anyway, my point is that I think that stuff is, a lot of people see that as,
inauthentic,
but I don't care. Like, I don't care about that. Like, if it sounds good, that's all I care about. Like, yeah. If I get it, you know, like I get that he, is doing this for entertainment, and I don't even necessarily need to know who Andrew Wilkes' career is versus Andrew WK. I want to be entertained. I want to be pumped up. You know, like, I guess I do care about the authenticity to a degree, you know, if it was like, but I've seen enough to know that I like what it is. Sorry, I think I cut you off.
No. I agree with you. Do I really fundamentally care who the person is? This is like a very common thing with all artists or musicians or anyone in the spotlight, is everybody wants to know who they really are. And I don't know, I've always kind of not cared who people really are. At the same time, though, it's like there is something about it's, oh man, it's this fine line between what is the musician or the artist doing? Are they being authentic, or what is what they're creating sincere? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the word. And I feel like Andrew WK is sincere. And I think that's kind of when it comes back to like punk rock and sellouts or posers or all that whole thing. It's like, it's this idea that you have to be sincere for it to count.
Right.
And I acknowledge that. Like if there's, I'm there's plenty of music that I like where the person making the music is doing it on behalf of someone else, or it wasn't their idea, or they aren't sincere, and I still listen to it because I like the sound of it. But I think the music I really like, the stuff that's my top 10 lists and my favorite things of all time, when I look at those things, they're typically from people who really are sincere and they really do mean the things they're saying.
Well, okay, so let's take this analogy for a minute. With being sincere, because I think that they can exist. Well, I think they can both exist, and what I mean by that is Andrew WK can be sincere, but also at the same time have a team. You know, like maybe he wears makeup when he goes on stage, or uh-huh. You know, he has like a hairdresser in the back to make him look like a metal guy. You know, that would be like kind of contradictory, right? So. But the double standard I want to point out is that look at the movie, like the film industry versus the music industry. Like people know that a movie is created because you have like these, I mean, just by its nature, it's a little bit more obvious that you have a whole team of people working on a film, right? You right. have a director, you have an executive producer, you have the cinematographer, you have the composer, you have the actors, you have this whole team that at the end of the day produces a product, and you consume that product, and it's, and then you can even to go further, you can watch the DVD of how they made that, right?
Right.
The double standard is with music, when you have that same exact scenario of a team putting out a product and an album, it's looked down upon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's looked at not sincere. It's saying like, oh, you didn't just write this on the foot of your bed strumming your guitar. You know, you had people like crafting this thing, and because you weren't crying at the foot of your bed when you came up with all this stuff, you're somehow this song sucks now because I know that knowledge. Whereas
right, to me, why do we give the movie so much credit or yeah, why does no one ever say, oh, that movie, I'm not going to see that. Those guys are sellouts.
Right.
No one's ever said that about a movie.
Or even like stage names, right? Like, so like, let's say Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris is not, he's an actor, and he is, his real name is not Chuck Norris. It's an alias. It's a stage name. But,
right.
You know, a music performer picks an alias to use, and they're looked down upon. You know, it's like, you know, it's not authentic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good. I mean, ultimately, what I've always thought was so with music and movies, we as humans, like, it's so strange to think about when you go into a movie theater, you're paying someone to artificially create emotions in you. Like, and we want that. We want to be lied to. Like, we want the movie, which is completely false, to have a. We invite it to make us cry. Like, we want the movie to make us feel bad or make us feel sad or feel anxious or feel afraid. And we mm-hmm. want that. And it's such a weird construct. And it's like, we should be totally, you're convincing me here, like, we should be totally willing to give the same attitude towards music. Like, I'm paying for emotion. If that emotion is given to me, I don't care how it's manufactured or how it's given. You mean if it's presented in a way that makes that emotion feel differently, then I guess that's their fault for not presenting it in the right way. But so long as it makes me feel a certain way, that's all I should care about.
Right, right. Yeah, and again, it's like you can only be so authentic, right? When Tim Armstrong sings about, you know, some song about, I think his last album's called Troublemaker. Like, I mean, he's a millionaire, you know, like,
live slumming in the East Bay or whatever.
Yeah. Like how big of a troublemaker is he?
Right.
Totally. I still like the song though, you know, and it does, I guess, you know, I guess it gets me riled up. And I would say that like, he's one of the most authentic, like, punk representations of authentic punk rockers there is, you know, he never sold out or whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, even that, it's so debatable. Did Rancid sell out? I mean, that was like a big deal back in like early 2000s, late 90s, when all of a sudden like Roots Radicals was playing on the radio. It's like, that was like a big faux pas within punk music listeners. Like, oh man, now they have a music video that's on MTV, disqualified, you know?
right. So yeah, that's all a whole thing, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
To think how we can control or manipulate our emotions like that. We have to have some sort of self-awareness to think about doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. And I think we should end it right there. I think this is a good show. that's the show.
Okay. Great.
Thanks, Richard. It's good talking to you.
Thanks, Zach. Thanks for the time tonight. I appreciate it. And next week, we'll get into it some more.
Sounds good. See you later.
See ya.